and several years before as well, I had a nervous breakdown. So with all of these things sort of coming to the surface and bubbling to the surface, I knew that if I was going to embark on the journey of going to court and essentially fighting for my son to not leave the country, I would say that moment was a catalyst that brought me to where I am now. Although whilst I was in that space, I had no idea that I would find myself a year and a bit late embarking on a coaching journey. Your hands might be full with whatever these things are. And sometimes you need to actually let go and release so that you can receive what else is out there for you. But until you do that, you can't.
Welcome back to the Better Than Best Academy with your host, Coach Red Wallace. And I'm excited for today's conversation.
With that said,
everyone listening, everyone watching, give a round of applause for my guest today, Mike. Now, Mike, obviously the people at home may not know who you are, so just let us know. Who is Mike?
Yeah, so my name is Mike Simon. I'm from the UK, London. I'm a somatic coach. Obviously, we can dive into all of that as the conversation goes on. Yeah, I'm a somatic coach. I've also got a background in dance, having danced professionally for many years. I'm a brother, I'm a stepdad, I'm a partner, I'm the eldest of four. Yeah, the eldest of four. And yeah, you know, I'm on X or Twitter. I call it Twitter still. X is just weird for me.
It's weird.
Twitter X. I'm on there predominantly. I'm using that social media platform to build my coaching business. And that's where we connected, you know, sometime. It was a while ago now, wasn't it? Can't remember exactly, but it's been a while since we kind of connected.
Yeah, for sure. But probably been about a year at least.
At least a year. Yeah, which is good, man. So yeah, that's a bit about me. And I'm sure we'll dive a lot more into, you know, my world and kind of what I do, etc.
For sure. And it's so interesting because you've got, I feel like we relate on a few different levels. And even talking to you, you've played drums at church in the past when you were growing up. I danced for a little bit myself, not professionally, but definitely danced and moved my body for a bit. I know it's surprising. You see the red hair and you might think, what, this guy? Does he have a soul? Does he ever go? You'd be surprised. So there's so many ways we can get into your journey. I'm curious, tell us a little bit more about your dance experience. Like how was that?
Yeah. So I'm 36 this year and I've been dancing since I was 11.
Wow.
So it's been some time. And I initially started dancing in my grandparents' living room, watching Michael Jackson tapes, you know, the history, Jackson 5. And trying to practice moonwalking on the carpet. Obviously, on the carpet, it's a lot easier, right? When you're in your socks, you're just gliding. So that was kind of like my thing, you know, watching videos, Janet Jackson, you know, watching the channel that we had, the Bops, the music channel. I realized that you can actually make money from dancing because I didn't really know that was a thing. I was always dancing because I was passionate about it. I enjoyed movement, etc. As I got older, I was able to travel, you know, I went over to the States, to New York, to LA, trained with, you know, people that are doing great things in the industry. And I was dancing full time professionally around like 2011, 2010, 2013. My son was born in 2013 and things changed a bit then when he was, but yeah, you know, I've danced with different artists, music videos, stage shows, award shows, and then I transitioned into doing some more theater work. So taking the dance work into the more theatrical realm and bringing in narrative to the pieces of work as well. And that's been like my most recent exploration before lockdown. But as of now, I don't dance as much as I would like to. One, mainly because of time, and two, I don't dance professionally anymore. That's not my bread and butter, you know?
Yeah.
And so as much as it's an industry that looks like it's all like, you know, stars and glimmer and spotlight and stuff, all of that is true, but people are seeing it from one perspective. But when you actually, it's a lot of work, you know, you're self-employed. So unless you have gigs lined up or you know when your next gig is, you know, you're not making money, and it's very competitive because you're auditioning in most cases for roles, at least for the bigger roles. or the bigger jobs, you're auditioning quite a lot and it can get quite tiresome. I mean, I loved it, but I was in a different stage then. So I was younger and didn't have, you know, a child. I was still living at home with my parents. So I had the freedom and the flexibility to really explore and just follow my passion without any limitations, you know? But yeah, dance is always part of me. It's never going to go, you know, I'm always, you know, moving around in the apartment or, you know, trying to get to class as frequently as I can. I just love it, man. It's never going to go away. Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah. I feel like when you dance and you love it, it never really, it's always something that stays with you.
Yeah.
I feel like when you're creative and whenever it is that your outlet for it, you always have a piece of that that you carry with you, no matter how old you are or if you're doing it. That is so interesting, the fact that you got some amazing opportunities to dance with some celebrities, some musician artists, right? That's so cool.
Yeah.
That's so cool.
Yeah, it's great, man.
I'm curious. So now with that, because I feel like our journeys and our stories, they kind of stack on each other and they're all connected. And I'm curious, out of that, obviously now you're doing this coaching and it's an interesting form of coaching. I feel like a lot of people don't really get, but maybe explain a little bit of the coaching you do now, but then also it's kind of a two-folded question. Also kind of explain how dancing kind of got you into this space of coaching, because I feel like they're connected.
Yeah, for sure. And it definitely is. Whilst I never comprehended that as I was exploring everything. So how I got into somatic coaching, it's been a long, it probably was quite short. So I was going through some challenging moments in terms of going to family court with regards to my son and his mum. She wanted to leave country. Of course, being dad, I was like, no, I don't want that to be the case. We had previously lived abroad when we was together. Then we came back, we was doing our thing. And then she wanted to go back home again. Cool. So we were going through family court. And around this time, of course, it was very stressful. And what actually started to notice in myself, it unearthed a lot of the trauma that I had experienced from in the past with this individual in the relationship and after the relationship. And several years before as well, I had a nervous breakdown. So with all of these things sort of coming to the surface and bubbling to the surface, I knew that if I was going to embark on the journey of going to court and essentially fighting for my son to not leave the country, I needed to be at my best. And I didn't feel like I was at my best because I felt like all of this was coming up to the surface. To be quite honest, I didn't know if I was going to be okay. You know, I'm in a new relationship with my partner who is very supportive. And she was obviously aware of my past and where I was in the present day. So I took it upon myself to go to therapy. So I went to therapy for 12 weeks, which was the best thing and the most timely thing that I did for my mental well-being, emotional well-being, spiritual, like just holistic well-being. It was very necessary, especially at that time. You know, I took several years after I had my breakdown when I was 27 and I was putting off therapy. You know, it just wasn't a priority for me. So it got to that point where it's like, I've experienced a breakdown before. I don't want it to happen again. Now I'm faced with this very big challenge in front of me, which is costly on my health and also my pocket. Right? Going to court is not, it's not cheap. And so therapy really helped me to like get through that period. In addition to obviously my partner and, you know, close people around me that knew that I was going through stuff. So I would say that moment was a catalyst that brought me to where I am now. Although whilst I was in that space, I had no idea that I would find myself a year and a bit later embarking on a coaching journey. So after therapy, I was doing some additional jobs, you know, to get some more money, you know, obviously to pay for the fees, et cetera, and just kind of get myself back in a good place financially. I was working two jobs. I was delivering pizzas in the evening. And I was also all around this time, I was speaking with my partner about wanting to help other men who had gone through or were going through a similar situation that I did in terms of like the court system, I mean, it might be quite a global thing, but the court system with regards to fathers is wild, in my opinion, having gone through it. And I didn't even go through it as deeply as other men have gone through it, right? But I just felt like I wasn't really being heard, you know, in terms of what I wanted to say. Not necessarily from the judge, but just in terms of being able to get my point across. It's not criminal court. So you're not going head to head against, you know, somebody. It's all in favor of the child, which is understandable, but it's also frustrating because there's some things you want to say and you want to bring to the table that have no business being in a family courtroom.
Right.
So I wanted to help other men. So I explored what that might look like, whether that would be me studying in some sense the legal profession, whether that was me looking down this therapy route, which I looked at to become a therapist myself. I looked at all different avenues, but none of them were quite resonating with me as in terms of actually taking the time and investing the money and the time to kind of get to that position. So then I decided to create a subscription box, which was called the Mental Box. It's like a play on words about mental health, but also a toolbox, right? And it was catered to men. And the intention was to cultivate conversations around men's mental health. So I started that business idea, did it for a little bit, but I very quickly came to realize that the business model itself is not sustainable as one person who hasn't got funding. Like it's crazy because in order to get a good price for the products, they were grooming products, by the way. So like, you know, beard, creams, oil, shaving stuff, shower gels, face masks, all of that.
Yes.
So in order to get good unit costs, you obviously have to buy more. It's economies of scale. But because I was brand new and I didn't have that many subscribers, it was very difficult for me to negotiate good prices, which obviously just kind of, it's like a bottleneck. It's difficult to grow. So I put that to a side and I said, look, it doesn't make sense to keep putting time and money into this and effort. So from there, I was exploring other options. You know, do I go back to uni? Do I do dance movement psychotherapy? I was thinking of doing a master's in that to be able to help more specifically dancers. So I pivoted slightly from fathers going through court to more like dancers. And then I came across life coaching, which I didn't really know existed before. So life coaching, I did a course. It was $20. In fact, I tweeted about it today. I did $8 life coaching, self-guided on Udemy, just to test the waters and see if it would be something that I actually like and actually do it. Got through that, updated my Instagram page, changed it from a subscription box to now this life coaching, like, you know, Mike Simon life coach, et cetera, et cetera. And I started, you know, and I did get, you know, a client quite soon after making that decision and soon after the training. But I felt within me, there was something more that I wanted to explore. And so, but there was a brother that I connected with on Instagram who was a men's coach, men's work, spirituality, etc. And he posted a video where he was doing movement and it was very captivating and intriguing. And I know he's not a dancer professionally and I wasn't, well, I hope I wasn't judging him, but it was more like, I know you're not a dancer, but you're moving. What are you doing? And then he had hashtag somatic at the end of that particular post. So obviously in my mind, I'm computing movement, spiritual element, you know, healing. What he was saying was, or what he, his caption had was quite healing. And then the word somatic, which I had never heard before at that point. So of course I went down the rabbit hole, went to Google, started researching somatics, and it was just making a lot more sense and something was resonating with me, but couldn't quite articulate what it was. And then that's when I stumbled across the coaching school that I trained at as a somatic coach. The somatic school is the name of the school that I trained at. And yeah, that was the turning point. You know, I was able to enroll in the course, 7-month course, to learn the skills, enhance the coaching skills from the $20 course that I did. Very much enhanced it anyway, because it was only $20. It was a good course, but it was $20. So it added to, I would say it gave me a more solid foundation, not only in coaching, but in the body oriented somatic skill set that I now employ in my in my practice, in the work that I do. So yeah, that's the long answer. It's never, whenever someone asks me, it's never a short answer.
Yeah.
I always feel compelled to give as full of the story as possible so people can see the journey to, you know, to kind of get to where I have. And whilst it may seem like it was going to, I mean, it may have been about a year, but there was just so many things that was taking place at that time that were very pivotal for me. But I just didn't know that in the moment because everything was just happening.
Definitely. And I want to circle back. So you start this men subscription box. This, you said it was the men toolbox. I like that play on words. I think that's a really interesting thing. And I'm curious because I feel like a lot of people would skim over that part. But you had the understanding to know when something wasn't working and to pivot. And I think that's important. I feel like a lot of people miss that. And I'm curious, what do you think it was in you that made you, because a lot of times we hear, you know, give up on your dreams. And it's not necessarily an issue of dreams in this aspect. It was an issue of your need to help people. Like that's the goal behind the goal. And you knew that, but you were like, let me try this. And as you're trying it, you're like, this is it. So you pivoted. And I'm curious, what do you think it was in you that was like, this isn't working, let's pivot and try something different?
That's a really good question. There just was this knowing. And so the mental box was not my first small business venture. In uni, so I was 18, 19, I started a clothing line. You know, so it was like t-shirts and hoodies and so forth.
Yeah.
And it was heavily inspired by like popular culture, kind of like taking something and then creating artwork out. Like, I mean, like taking the Ghostbusters. I never did that because I know the legal stuff behind it, but it was that sort of era, you know, indie era. Like I was heavily inspired by Johnny Cupcakes. I don't know if you know that brand.
Yeah.
Like it was that kind of vibe. That was my clothing line. I've had experience in starting small businesses. And, you know, I don't have that clothing line anymore. And there was a point where I pivoted. Well, I closed it down. I didn't pivot, really. Depends on which way you look at it. But when my dance profession started taking off, that's when I stopped clothing. So I've pivoted before. So with this subscription box, I'm working full time. I'm building this thing on the side. I've got a relationship. You know, I've got my son, my stepson. I'm doing things. And I was doing a bi-monthly box. So the math wasn't mathing. Like it just wasn't taking sense.
Yeah.
Because my subscription box was £60 bi-monthly. So I'm only getting paid four times in a year. Right. I've got just how I like was doing things. There was the product inserts inside the box. There was obviously the products that I was challenged with the prices on. So by the time I put everything together and the time I put into find suitable suppliers and all of these sort of things, it didn't make any sense. Like financially, it just didn't make any sense. So I would have been a fool to continue without additional support. And I did think about that. I was like, do I really want to try and get a loan for this? Like it wasn't a burning passion of mine too much. I wanted to help, but it wasn't like this is the only way that I could help. I was very open to the idea of moving or changing or shutting it down. And I'm glad that I did, because I think when you come to a point where in yourself something feels out of it, you should take heed and listen. And I feel that is definitely what was happening for me. Like it was taking me somewhere else. It was actually causing more stress than good. And it's not to say that I was stressed, but it was just so much mental work. It was so draining to be able to build and stacking the momentum was a lot, because again, it's only every 2 months that I was sending the box. So as soon as I sent the last one, I'm able to prepare for the new one. And then I was thinking, okay, well, to increase the momentum means that I could do it monthly, but then that meant I would have to change the prices and I would have to work even harder to get product, you know? So it just wasn't making any sense. So I wasn't afraid to pivot. And if I didn't, I wouldn't be where I am now. So yeah, I think that's a great question. And it's an important lesson, because I feel that sometimes you can get so caught up in the thing, you know, you can be so blinkered that you're not open to what the other possibilities might be for you, you know, if you just let that go. Like I've said this before to people, where like your hands might be full with whatever these things are. And sometimes you need to actually let go and release so that you can receive what else is out there for you. But until you do that, you can't receive. You know, people want, you know, this and that and this type of lifestyle, but it's like, have you got the capacity to receive what you're asking?
Good.
You know, and that capacity could be on so many different levels. Emotional capacity, you know, mental capacity, physical, you know, do you have the space to get the big car that you want, you know, the expensive car, you know, do you have the finances? So capacity can mean so many different things. And I feel that for me, that's the lesson. I had to let go of the subscription box in order to make way for the unknown, because I didn't know what was coming, but I just knew there was a burning desire in me to help in some way, shape or form. And that was enough to take me, to fuel me on my pivot down this unknown path.
Man, that sucked. And I love that distinction you just made, because how many of us and those listening or watching, I want them to ask this question to themselves, like, what can you let go of in order to grab on to what you're supposed to be doing? Because that's such a key thing. And it makes me think of too, it's like almost viewing our journey in life like a road trip. I don't know if they do. You might do road trips and...
Oh, not so much here, but I get it. Awesome. Yeah.
You get the analogy. It's this idea of like, there's a lot of cities in between you and your actual destination. And a lot of times we'll mistake the pit stops. Like, say you got to stop and eat, or you got to stop and rest because you went too far. We'll mistake those places along the way as the destination, but really they're just a part of the road to the actual destination. And I think that's such an interesting train of thought. Now, obviously we're both in this space of coaching now. I feel like a lot of what we have to do in the marketing side, unfortunately, is explaining people, not necessarily the necessity of coach, because I believe you don't need a coach, but to really excel in life, it's great to have a coach. And I really encourage people to get a coach. I'm curious, what would you say to someone that may be listening, and obviously my audience, and majority men, that maybe don't understand, they're not necessarily anti-coaching, but they just don't understand what's the value and the benefit of coaching or therapy to get that emotional intelligence? And even with what you do, it's a little bit different. But I'm curious, what would you say to someone that's on the fence of getting a coach like you or me? And they're just like, why would I do this? What would you say to them?
For me, what comes around is definitely about awareness, because I think coaching ultimately, not primarily, but a big part of it is about bringing awareness to whatever the material is that the client is bringing, or it could be a group coaching experience, but whatever's being brought to the table. And so what I have to say to that is that what animal has free? I don't know. It's a pigeon. I think a pigeon or birds could turn their head behind them, right? We can't do that. We don't have, you know, 3-6, unless we obviously turn our whole selves, we don't have the capacity to see everything. So I'm using that kind of in a loose metaphorical sense then.
For sure.
A coach could shine a light on your blind spots by being curious, or, you know, supporting you to be curious and self-inquire, and also being curious themselves to usher that conversation forward in the direction that you want to go. And so it's about cultivating that self-awareness, because we've all got blind spots. And also there's things that, especially in the line of work that I do, it's not just about the conceptual lens, right? So from a somatic perspective, it's also about the body and the wisdom that is within the body. And so there's things that are going to be outside of our, you know, our our awareness conceptually that a coach, regardless of their modality, in all fairness, a coach can actually shine a light on. You know, like you drive a car and you've got your inside mirrors, you've got your side mirrors. Without those, you're driving and there's going to be danger that you're not going to see. Those mirrors there, those internal mirrors and those left and right mirrors are there to support you to highlight your blind spots. And so I see a coach just like that, highlighting the blind spots for the client so that they can be aware of that and self-inquire into what that actually is so that they can overcome those challenges or make the situation better, because it's not always a challenge. Someone could be doing really good, happy, but they want more. You could still employ a coach for that, right? And so in partnership, working with the client or clients, if it's group work, you can work towards whatever that common goal is that had been identified at the beginning of the contractual agreement and or the beginning of the session. Yeah, that's kind of how I would like sum it up. And, you know, I know with men, we like to be the fixers. We like to be, generally speaking, you know, obviously I'm generalizing, we like to be the helpers. We like to be the doers. And so seeking help, you know, from a help, someone in a helping profession, whether that's therapy, counseling, you know, even the gym to some extent, you know, depending on what type of individual you are, there's like this tendency to feel like it makes you less of a man for doing so. And that's complete BS. Like it doesn't, right? It empowers you. Some of the greatest men and women, of course, but if we speak from a male perspective, had coaches, had mentors, had people that they can look up to, you know, and they could pick their brain on certain things, or someone that can hold them accountable in the line of work that they're doing. And so having a coach, I think that there's still quite a lot to learn or maybe unlearn with regards to the coaching industry, especially on I've got a lot to say about the space that we find ourselves in as coaches, because there's this misunderstanding on what coaching is. Yeah. There's a lot of individuals that are coming into the space and thinking coaching is the quickest way to make money. And it's not. Anybody that's thinking that on this show, it's not. It is not. Right? And so they're taking their life experiences, which could be quite profound, not discounting that. And they're packaging it up. They're packaging it up. And they're saying, look, I've done X, Y, Z. I can help you do the same. I'm now a coach. Pay me $5,000. And it's like, but that's not coaching. You could be an amazing teacher. You probably are an amazing mentor or even consultant. But coaching, in my perspective, and also the perspective of like ICF, which is the International Coaches Federation, that isn't in their definition. Coaching is a partnership first and foremost. So by way of you saying, this is what I've done, I'm going to teach you, you've already created a gap in terms of hierarchy, that you're the expert and the person beneath you, your client, is not. And so therefore you need to teach them everything so that they can achieve what they want. That's not coaching. That's something else is not coaching. Coaching is a partnership. It's a co-created space where you work together in service of the client for their goal, not your goal, because you want to get them to £10,000 a month so that you can get a testimonial from them. That's irrelevant. It's for their goal. And I'm very passionate about this stuff, as you could probably tell. Like, it's
a lot. Me too. Yeah.
Yeah. It needs to be changed. And obviously the issue is that, unfortunately, the coaching industry is not regulated. So you don't need a qualification. Now, I'm not saying that everyone that is a good or great coach or wants to be a coach needs a qualification, but I feel at the very least, there should be a base level understanding of what coaching is and isn't. Like, yo, I pay $20 to do a coaching course.
Yeah.
You can do that. Like, you know, it's your, you know, just to understand, like, questioning how to hold the space in terms of, you know, how to set up a coaching call, you know, in terms of like what it would look like, you know, contracting with your client so they know where they're, so you both know where you might go, you know, all the boundaries, self-care for coaching, all of these things. And on Twitter, it's like the Wild West where, yeah, like I've had people message me about certain things and I'm like, okay, you know, are you happy for me to share something back to you? Yeah, okay. And I kind of share, you know, what my thoughts are on it, because the last thing I would want is for someone to go out and be, it's a the work we do is sensitive. We're working with people and their lives.
Yeah.
So it's not something to be taken light. I sure don't. And I'm sure you don't either. You know, we're playing people's lives. We are engaging in a mental, emotional, energetic, and potentially spiritual, depending on where your thoughts are, agreement with someone and financial in exchange for that work. And so there needs to be a lot of sensitivity and awareness and integrity around coaching. And where it's not regulated, obviously it can get a bit messy for some people who are just stepping into the space, like I said, wanting to make quick money. And I think what further perpetuates it is the fact that there's actually individuals out there that are making quick money. So they're validating the idea even more that it's possible, which is even more dangerous.
And I agree completely. I get so frustrated seeing the amount of pros. I'm trying to think of the best way to coin it, but it's just, it's so frustrating. Because I too agree, it needs some kind of regulation. And if anything, I just wish that people weren't so romanticized by that idea of the get rich quick. Because that's such a, and all these crazy vanity metrics that people push out, like, oh, I got these people thousands and thousands of dollars a month because they did my coaching. And if you listen to them, they're not coaching at all.
No. And you can,
they're consulting, no, maybe. You can, yes. Oh, yeah.
You can tell. I'm probably doing a great job. And this is the thing, like, whenever I was quite angry with kind of sharing this viewpoint, because I didn't want to come across like a dick. Like, oh, he knows, he thinks he knows it. That's not the case at all. I'm just very passionate about what I've been training and will continue to train to do. But these metrics, and it's like, you can kind of tell. I was sharing with someone the other day that on Twitter, and those for those of you that are not on Twitter, it may kind of go over your head, but you know, here's, I read Pixar storytelling and I learned these 7 lessons and I'm sharing them with you. And in their bio, it says coach. And like, this dude is posting all of this great content, educational content around storytelling and around sales and around marketing. But I've never seen, I can say with certainty, I have not seen on my timeline at least, any of these individuals that call themselves coaches but are not coaching, share anything about a coaching book or resource that they've read and what they've learned from it. I find that very concerning, because there's coach. I mean, this is what I'm saying. I don't think it's a necessity to go and do a course in coaching. The same way that you can learn about psychology, of course, you can't go and don't call yourself a psychologist because there is regulations, right? But you can consume a coaching book and at least learn the fundamentals of, you know, the different frameworks. There's, I forget what they mean, but there's like Stoker's, for instance, which, you know, can kind of go through. There's different frameworks, like the GROW model. I myself, I've never used those. That's just not the way that my coaching works. It's very emergent. So those models are not, you know, like the Wheel of Life, all of those sort of things, you know, that people use. They are quite framework based, but at least have that understanding, man, if you're going to call yourself a coach. But yeah, this could be a whole podcast, bro. It could be on that.
Honestly, it can be. We can go. And I feel like having these conversations are necessary. I'm where you're at. Like, I didn't ever want to come off me getting in it to make a ton of money. Now, granted, not at the expense of people's lives. And I feel like a lot of people, they're so quick to scale. They're so quick to get into the trap of marketing because, I mean, it's sexy and alluring to hear that, you know, you take 2 weeks with me and you'll start making $1K a month or $10K a week or $100K a month. And it's alluring to hear that. And when you see like proof of that, it's very easy to be like, oh, I want to be just like that. I just wish they wouldn't call themselves coaches. Let's just put it that way.
You know, because they did that.
Yeah, that's it. Because like when I see that, maybe call yourself a consultant. Maybe call yourself, you know, a business mentor, someone that's going to help you, or even a teacher, like you said, like you even mentioned that, like even a teacher, because it's so much different when you step into the realm of coaching, because I believe it's a spiritual thing, because I believe that that's when we look at our lives holistically, that the spirit aspect is a very important aspect. Commit yourself to learning and doing this yourself and getting your own coach and a coach that actually is a coach. Because I think that's a big issue too, is there's been so many of these people that become coaches of coaches, but really they're just making carbon copies of themselves, which isn't coaching. But anyways, we'll get off of it.
Easily
be there all day. But to take it back to a little bit more of what you're doing, I know you have this, is it Cigars Framework? I'm really curious, what is this Cigars Framework and how did you come up with that?
Oh, So Cigars is a framework that I created, a journaling framework that I created, developed. And it's an acronym. I think it's a creative side, right? Acronyms, mental box, play on word, you know, double entendres, all of those sort of things. I love all that. So CIGARS stands for C, being check-in, I, intentions, G, gratitude, A, affirmation, R, reflection, and S, self-acknowledgement. So those are like, how many is that, six? Those are like the six sort of segments of a journaling framework that I developed. So when I finished going into therapy, whilst I was going to therapy, I was journaling quite a lot. I've always journaled, but not consistency. During that period of time, I was like journaling a lot, meditating a lot as well. And so I found myself journaling quite extensively, but it was just like a lot of words. Very helpful, of course, but I wanted to find a way to sort of, it really was a time restriction with working full time and journaling in the morning. I found myself so immersed in journaling that I would be rushing to get to work, you know? So I wanted something that could kind of contain my writing experiences, my journaling in a particular way. And in all honesty, I can't remember exactly how I got to that acronym. But it is a combination of the somatic training that I've had. So checking in is checking in with yourself on an awareness level, but also on a somatic level. So like, for instance, right now, if I was to check in with myself, I can notice how my feet are placed on my chair. I can notice my belly's quite full. You know, so I'm noticing the sensations in my body. And I'm also just checking in, like, how am I feeling? Like, I'm a bit tired this morning. I'm feeling a bit of an ache in my shoulder. All of that is data. So that would be a check-in, you know, just saying, yeah, I'm feeling a bit tired. Yeah, I'm noticing that something in me feels like a bit of anxiety. Just checking in, just getting those things out on the page, because you could have all of these thoughts and feelings in your mind and your body, and they're supposed to be expressed. It's whether, you know, emotions, energy, emotions, it's not meant to stay in you. It's meant to be expressed healthily in some way, shape, or form. And I've always found journaling to be very helpful for that. However, I use the term to journaling as like my emergency parachute when something was going wrong in my life. When I was going through therapy, I committed to myself and said, I don't want this practice to be an emergency parachute. Like, I want it to be embedded in my life, you know, and I'm glad I have. And yeah, there's sometimes I miss a day where I might have a lie-in, or we might, you know, that's fine.
Yeah.
But I always say that journaling or any sort of practice is like an anchor. You know, when you have a ship, that, you know, they're docked or whatever, no matter how far, if they travel, as long as obviously the rope is long enough, they'll be able to be pulled back to shore, to the docking space. And I see practice needs to be the same. You know, you might not journal for a few days, you might not meditate for a few days, but because you've embedded that practice within you, you know that you always go back to it. Yeah, you might be a bit out of sync, but before long, you're back into it again. So yeah, the cigars framework very much was a way for me to manage my time with journaling so that I don't spend like 45 minutes writing away and miss my train to get to the office.
I love that. And can people get that? Is that somewhere? Is that somewhere people?
Yeah. So I created a Notion digital product, which is available on Gumroad.
Okay.
I might have taken down the link, but you can probably drop it in. Whether, you know, when this goes live, you can probably drop it.
Yeah, I'll put it in the description for sure.
Yeah. So yeah, that's available. So it's a Notion template. So it basically takes you through the framework. So the first couple of days you do the CIG and you practice that. And the next couple of days you do the ARS and you practice that. And then you bring it all together and you've got like a journaling checklist based on your days. And in addition to that, there's a guided somatic audio so that I've recorded. So it brings you into a sense of mindful awareness, embodied awareness before you start the practice. That's all part of it. And it's like 12 minutes. Yeah.
For sure. And I love that idea of making it a routine, because I think of when it comes to our habits or self-care or even a vacation matter. I feel like a lot of people think that they can just go do the self-care thing once and think, oh, yeah, Everything's going to be great. But that doesn't change anything. I would combat that with the idea of establishing the routine and committing to it, but not to a point where you're obviously like shaming and guilting yourself when you miss a day or two. But finding that balance of holding yourself accountable and being committed to something, but it's that routine of it that really establishes, like you said, it's that anchor. It's something to always go back to. It's something to always have. And I think that's such a great thought. Man, I'm curious, what would be like the simplest step? Say someone's listening, watching at home or on their way to work, wherever they're listening or watching this. What would you say is that one simple step that they can do right now to either start on this personal growth journey or continue on it?
I always would say journal, because it's the most cost-effective, accessible tool. Grab yourself a pen, grab yourself a notepad, pour yourself a herbal tea or play some music, get yourself comfortable, and just allow yourself to write what's on your mind. You know, ask yourself a question. For those individuals that have never journaled before, ask yourself a question. Like, allow your journal to be like the other person, essentially. You know, invite your journal to be that. You know, simply an affront could be, how am I feeling today? Like, for, you know, if you want to go that little bit deeper, how am I truly feeling today?
Hmm.
And then respond to that question. So ask yourself a question. That's self-inquiry at its finest. And I think in order to develop, you need to know yourself. And because we're always changing, you need to continuously spend time in solitude to know yourself, right? Those that don't know themselves are easily lured into things that are not aligned for them. They're easily taken onto another path that is not for them, because you don't know yourself. You don't know your value. You don't know your beliefs, right? And I'm continuously learning about myself.
Yeah.
And that's the whole point, right? Through development, you realize like, oh, I didn't really realize that. I didn't notice that challenge that I've been experiencing is actually as deep rooted as it is. But through reflections, through conversations, and doesn't even have to always be a coach. Have people in your life that can be a reflection, that can be a mirror to you, that can challenge you with compassion.
Yeah.
You know, you've got people around you that are still in the same place they were 5 years ago, and you also are there, but you speak so highly about being somewhere else. In like, for me, I would say it's like a pet peeve, but it's also something that I like to shine a light on. Complaining and wanting change at the same time doesn't really go hand in hand, in my opinion. If you are able to complain, it means that you are aware. And if you are aware, it means you can make a change.
That's good.
So you can choose because you have choice, right? Awareness cultivates choice. Choice means that you can make choices to change, right? So I think it's very important for someone starting off. Maybe those are the two things, right? Check your circles. Who are you around? And start journaling. Those are the first two things you can do.
Yeah.
You can go through your phone book. You can go through, you know, your Twitter feed or your Instagram feed and see what are you consuming? Who are you surrounding yourself by with? And also take time to learn who you truly are. And also who you desire to be. Yeah. Who are you becoming? That's a great question. You know, in sometimes with clients, like that question comes up. Okay. We might do an exercise. And who are you becoming on this journey? You know, you're saying you want to get here to, like, say if it's financial, 10K a month, or to be more aligned, et cetera, et cetera. And you're here. So we've got a gap. Who are you becoming on this journey? Because you don't just go from 0 to 100. Every day, every month, every year, you're becoming, you're embodying a new person, a new version, sorry, of you as a person to get there. Who you were at level 2 is not who you're going to be at level 10. You play a video game, you know, and you clock level 2, but you need to innovate. You need to, you know, you need to get some new guns, or you need to get a new backpack, or, you know, a new skin in order to get you to the next level. It's the same thing with life, you know. But I feel that some people kind of see personal development as like woo woo, and I'll just go with the flow. Yes, it's a balance, because I feel that you can get too invested in personal development that you don't live life and kind of like
be
open to possibilities. However, you have the power, you have the agency to be able to make the change you want to see. Don't just sit down and scroll and complain and look at other people making the changes that they want in their life. You can do something about it. And it starts with you, because no one's coming, you know, to do it for you. Like, you have to do it for yourself if you really want to.
That's so good. Man, as we get ready to land this plane, say, I've just got two more questions for you. The first one is, did I miss anything that you would like to share before we wrap up today?
Think it would be worth, because I've shared it quite a lot at the beginning, to just lead with the most simplistic definition I could give of somatic coaching, because obviously I've shared I'm a somatic coach.
Yeah.
We haven't really dived too much into that, and I wouldn't want the audience viewers to leave and be like,
what is he doing? for sure. That's good.
So in simple terms, the word somatic derives from the Greek word soma. And the Greek word soma essentially means of the body. And so somatic coaching is employing body-oriented skills in addition to the coaching framework. And so, over 55% of our communication is nonverbal. This communication, this, you know, moment we're having now, we're verbally communicating. I tend to move my body quite a lot naturally anyway. But our body is also communicating at the same time. And that accounts for about 55% of our communication. And so with somatic coaching, what I do is I support, guide, power the individual that I'm working with, become aware of not only how they think, but also how they feel, often in relation to what they think or whatever material they're bringing. So it's very healing. It can be very healing. It is very experiential. As well. So we're exploring. Yes, there's a particular framework to hold the coaching space and setting up the container, etc., and landing the plane at the end. But there's also the time for integration. It's a time to flow. is the time to do an experiment where I might invite the client to check in with their body in a particular way and notice what sensations are there. Because like I said earlier in the conversation, there's things that we are aware of on a conceptual lens that we can pluck out of our head and think about it, and sometimes think about it too much. That's where you've got the individuals where they're just so in their head and they're overthinking. But we experience life through our bodies, first and foremost, right? And so this work really allows you to come back home to your body, to slow down that little bit more outside of like the rat race or the Western society where everything is quite fast paced. It allows you to bring yourself down more to a more grounded level, you know, bring, you know, tend to your nervous system, to your body. And yeah, it's beautiful work, you know. So I just thought I'd kind of leave the viewers, the listeners, with that understanding so that if they wanted to, you know, explore what that is, they can do so. You now know what somatics and somatic coaching is. And yeah, predominantly people know about somatics from a therapeutic perspective, like somatic therapy or breath work or EMDR, EFT, the tapping, etc. Yes, all of that is part of body work. I'm not trained in those modalities specifically. There's more specific skills from a coaching set that I use. But yeah, of course, if it might bring awareness to the breath, yeah, because there may be stuff that emerges in a session where I might just invite the client to be like, how might it be just to stay with that, what you made just now, and just see what emerges for you? Is that presence, is that connection, that co-regulation as well? Yeah.
Man, Mike, this has been such a fun conversation. I knew we took some detours that I still think were necessarily conversations that needed to be discussed. But with that, as we wrap up, obviously I'm going to leave a link for how people can connect with you, how they can get that resource, that cigars framework, or even how they can potentially book a call with you and see what this is firsthand. Because I can't stress enough to my listeners and viewers, when it comes to coaching, you can hear about it all day and trying to do it yourself, and you probably could get 99% of what we talk about online, but it's that 1% that you'll get from the connection of the one-on-one or the one-on group with Mike or myself that really will open your eyes to a whole new world that you haven't even thought about. But as we close, again, I always like to ask this final question to my guests is, do you have any questions for me?
What is your vision with regards to coaching as the vessel?
That's good. What is my vision in regards to coaching as a vessel? I say at this time, I work with a handful of clients one-on-one. And I really want to take people on a journey. Like, I don't want to do these little one-off sessions with people. I really want to build that connection and those relationships with people and really help them long-term is what I see. But also I see an arm of that go into groups, because obviously, as you see, when we get more and more clients, it's that idea of we can only help so many people. And I just want to help as many people as I can. Like that's what at the core of what I do is I really want to help as many people as I can really rediscover their true identity and step into that calling and that purpose. And whatever the vessel looks like to get to there, I'm open for that.
Right. Love that. Yes. Thank you.
For sure. Thank you. Thank you for being a guest. Thank you for bringing such knowledge.
Don't forget to hit that subscribe button for more tips tailored to entrepreneur dads just like you. Or you can click this video to keep learning more. And until next time, you're doing better than you think. I'm praying for you, friend. Now let's go live better than best and conquer this week.